We are super excited because today's episode is sponsored by BarkBox.
As most of you guys know, my dog Mackie loves his chew toys, but they do not last very long in our house. And that's why we love our subscription service, BarkBox.
BarkBox is a monthly subscription box that offers an array of theme boxes for your pup. Inside your box, you'll find toys, treats, and unleash joy, thoughtfully designed to satisfy every dog's unique playstyle.
BarkBox has several boxes to choose from, depending on your dog's needs, such as the Super Chewer box, which was designed to challenge and engage your pup for longer-lasting play. And that's what we need for Mackie.
Right now, you can get a free extra month of BarkBox, which is up to a $35 value, by using our link www.barkbox.com/inhumanpod.
So treat your dog to what they love with BarkBox. www.barkbox.com/inhumanpod for a extra free month of BarkBox.
Hey guys, I'm Andrea.
And I'm Haley.
And welcome back to Inhuman. Okay guys, so once again, I'm so sorry, but I am doing another open case, cold case, whatever you want to call it. I'm going to be covering the disappearance of Natalie Holloway.
I don't know if I know this one.
You will once I tell some more details. Okay. I mean, it was a huge case when it first broke out, and unfortunately, there hasn't been like much movement, you know, in the last several years. So it is like still open, like I said, and yeah, it's a doozy. It's a sad case, but it's another crazy case too. It's got a lot of like all these crazy details.
Yeah. And these are the ones that need to be told too. Like, as difficult as it is to hear it and not have an answer, these are the ones that like really need to be told and pushed out there, because right. You never know, there have been a ton of cases solved because of podcasts and social media and stuff like that, and the more coverage it gets, you never
know the more the open cases, the more they're put out into, you know, the interwebs, the more chances of them getting solved. Okay, so Natalie Ann Holloway was a bright, beautiful 18-year-old high school student. She graduated from Mountain Brook High School, which is in Alabama. And something really cool, which I kind of wish my graduation class did this, but they had where you do something the same every year.
Tradition.
Thank you. Brain dead over here. Where the graduating class would take a trip to Aruba. So with over 100 of the 300 graduating students from her class, Natalie, of course, wanted to go on the trip.
Right.
Her parents were divorced and her father was not comfortable at all sending her on this trip. Her mother was kind of like, you know, she's 18, like she wants to go. It's kind of her decision. Right. And Natalie insisted on going. So
I feel like that's how it kind of goes with trips like that. Like, even I had a friend and we studied abroad in college, and her dad was like, I don't know if I want you going, but her mom was like, come on, she's in college, go.
It's
like,
fun. Yeah. There's always one parent, you know, good cop, bad cop. You gotta,
right,
gotta duke it out with them. But
yeah, that's fun too, that they had a trip. Like, my high school had a Europe trip that a bunch of the seniors went on. But it also was like, I don't know, maybe 40 people out of our 700 person class. So it wasn't like as big. Plus it was like $7,000. So that's,
We had little trips, but they were all like local, you know, like we went to like New York, we went to like Louisiana.
Oh, that's fun though.
But yeah, it was nothing like crazy out of the country, which I would have been so down for.
Yeah.
So even though Natalie was 18, she was very responsible. She got straight A's in school. She volunteered for lots of organizations. And she also had a full ride for 8 years to the University of Alabama, which I didn't even know that was a thing, that you could get 8 years full ride.
Yeah, because they do like your undergrad and your graduate.
That's crazy. That's awesome.
I knew somebody in college that she was a couple years younger than me, but she joined the ambassador program that I was in, and that, and she had like her undergrad, her grad school, and her PhD.
Wow.
Covered.
That's amazing. Yeah. She must have been really smart.
Yeah.
That's crazy. Which Natalie was very smart. She wanted to go to med school. So 8 years, all covered.
Wow.
Her stepbrother, like I mentioned, like her parents were divorced. And her stepbrother had actually gone on this trip a few years before with his graduating class. And also a couple of her cousins were going to go on the trip that she graduated with. So I guess that kind of like eased things for her parents a little bit,
you know,
as well. So on May 26, 2005, Natalie hopped on a plane to Aruba to let loose and go have some fun with her friends, which sounds like she earned it.
Yeah, that sounds so fun. And I'm guessing it's not going to end fun. And that makes me sad.
Yeah, it is. It's very sad. So there were chaperones on this trip, but their role was more so to like make sure that everybody was accounted for daily and that, you know, everyone was being safe. They weren't really there to like supervise the activities that were going on.
Okay.
Because in Aruba, the legal drinking age is 18.
So
most of the graduating class was 18, and Natalie and her roommates were 18, so they went out and partied a good bit during their time in Aruba.
Of course, yeah.
Which, like, do you, boo-boo?
Yeah. Who wouldn't?
I would have been doing the same thing, exactly.
Exactly.
I'm not going to tell you about the time I went out to the Bahamas. That was lots of drinking, lots of blacking out on that trip. But it was a lot of fun, so.
Yeah, well, you know, you gotta enjoy life, right?
In Rome, right? Yeah. So there was a specific bar that a lot of the Americans like to hang out at. It was called Carlos and Charlie's. And Natalie actually spent a lot of her time there. It's reported that Natalie and her roommates, which were also her friends, they had met a young man named... It's spelled Joran, but I heard it pronounced Joran, like with a Y. Because he's from like Denmark, I think. So his name was Joran Vandersloot. And they had met him earlier that day at a casino. And I guess Natalie and one of her friends had kind of been like, hey, you guys, you know, you and your friends or whoever should, you know, come and meet us at Carlos and Charlie's tonight. So, you know, the group had planned to meet up at Carlos and Charlie's later that night, and it was also their last night in Aruba, so of course they wanted to like party it up big and, you know,
of course,
do the damn thing. Yeah. Reports state that about 50 of Natalie's classmates planned to meet at that specific bar that night to celebrate their last night in Aruba. Around midnight, Joran arrived, and he had brought two of his friends with him. They were brothers Deepak and Satish Kalpo. I'm not really sure what I can't remember what their nationalities were, but, you know, Aruba, it's a smorgasbord of ethnicities and different, you know, races and all that stuff.
Right.
So they were seen, Natalie and her friends, Joran, Deepak, and Satish were all seen taking shots at the bar. They were taking shots of 151, which like, whew, that's some strong.
I don't even know what that liquor. Is.
It's like, I think it's a rum. And it's 151% alcohol. So it's like whatever, 80, 90 proof or whatever.
Yeah.
Really strong stuff.
Wow.
So after a little while, you know, everyone's dancing, having fun. Natalie's friends noticed that she was no longer at the bar and they began to look for her. They even left the bar and walked down the street to another bar to look for her there, but to no avail. They assumed that she was probably just intoxicated and she'd eventually make it back to her hotel room, which, like, don't ever do that. Don't ever assume. No,
keep looking.
Yeah. And since, you know, they all had American phone service, like, their phones did not work in Aruba because it was 2005. So they probably, you know, they didn't have all the plan options, like, you know, international, whatever, you know, while you're somewhere else, have your phone work. So.
Yeah.
So the next morning, when her roommates awoke, they saw that Natalie's bed had not been slept in. But a lot of people on the trip had kind of, like, crashed in other people's rooms, so they just assumed she must have crashed with some other students. And some students reported that they had seen Natalie in a car with three guys, the same ones that she had been hanging out with at the bar. So Yoren, Deepak, and Satish.
Okay.
So the following day, the graduating class boarded their plane to return to Alabama, and Natalie was still nowhere to be found.
Isn't that the whole point of the chaperones? Like, weren't they there to make sure that everybody was accounted for?
Well, one of the chaperones did decide to stay back and wait for her in case she was running late. So they took, I guess they postponed their flight or, you know, got a later flight, which good for them for doing that because, I mean, even though it didn't matter in the long run, but, you know, still the fact that they, you know, because sometimes things happen, you know, you're drinking, you oversleep, you miss your flight. Right. Like, it can definitely happen.
Yeah.
So the chaperones notified Natalie's parents that their daughter had never boarded the plane. They actually called her mom because I think she lived with her mom mostly. And of course, her, you know, her mom flew into a panic. She was actually in the car and she got pulled over because she was going 90 down the road. And she told the police, like, I have to get to the police department. Like, my daughter's in Aruba. She's missing.
Yeah.
Help me.
Oh my gosh. That fear, like, I freak out if I can't find Mackie in our, like, one story, like, small house. I can't imagine that fear of, like, my daughter is missing.
In a whole other country. Oh my gosh.
Yeah. Oh, that just, like, gives me chills just to think about. That's so scary.
So, you know, she arrived to the police department. She notified the authorities in their town in Alabama, and then they contacted the Aruban police. I think that's how you say Aruban. That Natalie was missing and had last been seen with a Dutch tourist, Yoren Vandersloot. But unfortunately, the police in Aruba told Natalie's parents they couldn't start a formal investigation until Natalie had been missing for 24 hours. That many young American vacationers seemingly go missing, but then it's later learned that they were drunk or on drugs somewhere, and then they turn up later. Which, like,
okay, what? But even if they're drunk or on drugs somewhere, shouldn't we be looking for them to make sure they're alive and okay? Like,
yeah, they're, like, in another country. Like,
yeah.
I hate that. And that's not what a mother in a panic wants to hear about her child. Like, oh, she's probably just drunk or on drugs somewhere. Like, don't worry about it. No. It's fine.
Yeah.
So Natalie's mother, Beth, chartered a plane and flew to Aruba with her husband. So she is remarried. It's not Natalie's father.
Hell yeah, you go.
I know. That's exactly what I would have done. I don't know if I would have chartered a plane because, like, that's a lot of money. But I would have definitely got on a plane to Aruba.
Yeah. Well, I mean, if there's, like, no flights or something like that, like,
that's true.
I'd charter a plane.
Gotta do what you gotta do. And they actually checked into the same hotel that Natalie had been staying in, which was a Holiday Inn. Okay. She asked the hotel manager if they had seen the man, Yoren, who was last seen with her daughter, and if he had been staying at the same hotel. The manager then told Beth that they were very familiar with Yoren. I keep saying Yoren. Yoren. In fact, he was not a tourist at all whatsoever, that he and his family actually lived in Aruba.
Oh my God.
And they were immigrants from the Netherlands.
I'm sorry, but if a hotel is familiar with a local, that just already is suspicious. Like,
yeah, exactly.
especially like a Holiday Inn. I would get it if it was like a luxury resort that people went to get lunch or something. But like, you know, a Holiday Inn isn't like the fanciest place ever. So that's sketchy.
I also gather that I guess the area that they were at is kind of small. So like a lot of people know each other and know of each other too. So that might have had a little something to do with it. But I think there was a lot of reasons why they knew about this guy.
Yeah.
He was often seen in the casinos, gambling, and hitting on attractive female tourists. So that was kind of his MO. She also found out that he was not 19 like he had originally told Natalie and her roommates, that he was actually a 17-year-old high school student. Yeah.
Ew.
Yeah. So Beth went back to the police and told them, you know, the information that she had found out. The police were still adamant that Natalie was sleeping off a bender somewhere or that she had ran away, which, like, stop saying that about people. People don't go to Aruba to run away.
Yeah, the running away, like, that makes me even more mad than the, oh, she's probably just drunk somewhere, because, like, what? Why? No. No.
Yeah. I mean, people do run away, but, like, we always say, like, parents know their kid. And, like, all of her belongings were in her room still. She had very limited cash on hand. She didn't have any of her credit cards. Like, she, you know, went down to Aruba with a set amount of cash and was like, this is what I'm spending, you know, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
So, like, how could she have ran away with nothing? No.
Yeah. I don't believe it.
So, finally, the police agreed to escort Beth and her group to the Vandersloot residence. Uran. I don't even know his name anymore. Uran wasn't home. But his father was there. It was like 2 a.m, by the way. I don't know. Okay. It's kind of crazy, but whatever. I would do the same thing. And I'm like, why isn't a high school student home at 2 a.m? But whatever. It's different. Yeah. Different strokes for different folks. And his dad called him and had him like return home immediately. So when he arrived at his house, he had his friend Deepak with him, who was also with him the night that Natalie went missing. Beth then aggressively questioned Euron, and he told her that he and Natalie had been flirting at the bar that evening and that Natalie had wanted to go to the ocean before going back to her room, and that the four of them went down to the beach near the lighthouse and went looking for sharks, and then they dropped her off around 2 a.m. at her hotel. They also mentioned that Natalie was highly intoxicated and that she like stumbled out of the car and I guess she like hit her head and all these details that just, you know, zhuzhed up their story a little bit, I guess.
Right.
Euron took everyone to the hotel and showed them where they had dropped Natalie off and told them again about how she was getting out and bumped her head and that a security guard supposedly helped her up. But Beth was not convinced that the boys were telling the true events of the night, and she was very skeptical, which good for her, like mother's intuition.
Yeah, good for her. I mean, like we've said, mother knows best.
Yeah, mother knows best. Sorry. So Natalie's mother actually stayed in her hotel room that night, like Natalie's hotel room, and this is so sad, but she left the light on in hopes that her daughter would find her way back.
Oh my god.
I know. So the following morning, Euron was asked by the police to come down to their department to give a formal statement of the events of the night. He told them what he had told Natalie's mom the night before. Both of Euron's friends told the same statement of the events to the police, almost to a T. And then, you know, there was nothing they could hold them for, so they were allowed to leave after they gave their statements. Police then finally passed out missing persons flyers. So I think it was like 4 days later at this point. But sadly, that was about all they did.
They were
still convinced that Natalie was high on drugs somewhere or drunk and would show up later. Beth hired a PI and they put out posters that read kidnapped. And finally, Natalie's case was taken a bit more seriously. And her story was put on the front page of the local newspaper and had a little bit of coverage on local news networks.
Good.
Police finally pulled some surveillance footage from the hotel from the night that she went missing, which, like, why didn't you do that first thing? But whatever.
Yeah.
And then they realized right away that the boys had been lying. There was absolutely no evidence that they had dropped Natalie off at her hotel.
All right.
Yeah. So now we have some movement.
Yeah.
Investigators then collected phone and internet records between Euron and Deepak. And it was reported that the following day after Natalie went missing, Euron had gone to school and there were several communications between him and Deepak. Satish, on the other hand, which is Deepak's brother, had missed school altogether.
All right.
So Deepak and Euron had met up later that night at the casino, and they were both seen drinking heavily when they received a call from Euron's father questioning him about Natalie's disappearance. So when Beth and her husband went to the Vandersloot,
yeah,
they were there. They were at the casino drinking again. Which I'm like, you're in high school. What are you doing?
Yeah.
So crazy. Where are your parents? So investigators believe that the boys had gotten together that night to get their stories straight about what happened or to possibly destroy evidence.
Oh my God.
So the boys were then taken into custody officially for questioning. Deepak maintained his original story. Satish, however, refused to comment at all. And Euron stuck by his same story mostly, except he did add some strange details that he originally didn't share in the first interview, like insinuating that Natalie was racist, like specifically towards Deepak and Satish. I'm not going to go into like what he said because it's all a bunch of bullshit, but
yeah,
basically like trying to make her look bad now because
they're
getting caught.
Yeah.
So Euron did eventually request a lawyer, and he admitted that he hadn't been fully honest about what happened, which like, duh. Now he says that he was not with the brothers when they dropped Natalie off at the hotel. He said that Deepak told him to say he was with him because it would sound better, and to lie about her falling out of the vehicle at the hotel to make it make her look bad, you know?
Of course.
Then he told police that Deepak kept his car in a warehouse and that if they were going to find any evidence, they should look there. Satish then came forward and said that he typically washes Deepak's car weekly and that the car had been washed the day Natalie went missing. So that morning he had washed it, and then that night she had gotten into the car. And that he did, you know, corroborate that it was kept in a warehouse when Deepak wasn't driving it. Police then told the brothers that Euron had presented a new statement that incriminated them. Yeah. So that when they arrived at the lighthouse, Euron and Natalie were too busy making out. So Deepak kept driving, and then Euron realized and asked for the two to be let out, and he would walk Natalie to her hotel. This is what the brother, Deepak is saying now. So supposedly the two went down to the beach and had a swim, and Natalie fell asleep on the beach. So Euron left her there. Euron also said that he had left his size 14 tennis shoes there. Yeah.
Just like my case this week.
Yeah. Because they had gotten sand in them and that he couldn't like locate them. So they were just gone. And police thought that was kind of suspicious. They were like, why did he add in that detail? Like, we didn't really need to know that, but maybe he was like trying to cover his tracks in some way.
Yeah.
Deepak said that he had a text message proving that they did not drop Euron and Natalie off at the beach, and that he took back saying that Natalie was highly intoxicated that night and that she actually seemed reasonably with it.
So his story's just all over the place.
Yeah. Yeah. They're all their stories are all over the place. Now Deepak is saying that he thinks Euron lied to cover up that he raped Natalie, and Satish backed his statement up. So all the boys are lying, which is like huge red flag. They're changing their story constantly, which to me seems like they're all guilty in some capacity, whether they're covering for someone or whether they all had something to do with it. It's very suspicious. So the police then questioned friends of Euron, and there were lots of reports of violence. Evidently, he liked to get drunk and fight people, and that he also liked to use women for sex, and he frequently treated women like garbage. So they talked to some of his ex-girlfriends who basically backed that up and said, yeah, he treats women like a doormat.
Okay.
And if you remember, as I mentioned before, he was also known to interact with attractive female tourists, you know, right, taking advantage of them or whatever because they're intoxicated, having fun, whatever. Another interesting fact to mention is that Euron's father, Paulus, told Natalie's mother, Beth, that he had picked up Euron and Natalie the night prior.
It sounds like that's a little bit of a trying to cover up for your kid right there.
Yeah. That they had, I guess, gone to a McDonald's and that he dropped her off safely at her hotel. It's also mentioned that Paulus told Euron that without a body, without a crime scene, and without a weapon, the investigators had nothing.
Oh my God.
Yeah. And he is also very well connected in Aruba. So
okay,
those are all just interesting tidbits I wanted to throw in there. Because, like you said, it sounds like he's trying to cover up something.
Yeah.
So aside from the three boys, there was also another suspect in the case, Steve Crows, who also happened to be an acquaintance of Euron and the brothers. He was taken into custody. Actually, he came forward like completely on his own and backed up the story that Euron and the brothers like were seen hanging out with Natalie that night, that they went down to the beach and then they dropped her off at the hotel. Supposedly he saw them drop her off at the hotel and at the beach and at the bar. I'm like, how are y'all at all these places, dude? But so later he was taken into custody and questioned again. And he said he had absolutely nothing to do with Natalie's disappearance and that he was at work the night she went missing. But witnesses actually spotted him at Carlos and Charlie's the night she went missing. And his boss said that he was not at work that night.
Okay.
So another suspicious possible link. There were also three fishermen that were at the beach the night, the beach that they supposedly went to the night that she went missing. And they were all there until 4:30 a.m., which would have been well past the time of 2 a.m. when they said they dropped Natalie off. And they never saw Deepak's car or anyone resembling Euron or Natalie. And they said that, like, it was a full moon that night. So, like, there was lots of light and they could see the beach clearly. There was no wind. They did see a Jeep with a male and a female in it, but they had like English accents as opposed to American and Dutch accents. So again, they're lying. Nothing is making sense.
Right.
So on July 4th, Deepak and Satish were let out of custody. However, Euron was kept for an additional 60 days. I couldn't really find why. I think they maybe just wanted to like break him down a little bit more to try to get more details, but
nothing. And maybe they had more on him, so they were able to keep him for longer.
Yeah. He definitely seemed the most suspicious of the three, in my opinion. Beth was outraged, which is Natalie's mom. She was completely enraged. She went to the media, and it was not taken well at all. She stated, quote, "It is now that I ask the world to help me. Two suspects were released yesterday who were involved in a violent crime against my daughter. Help me by not allowing these two to get away with this crime." And it was also, I couldn't get this like exactly quoted from her, but it was also stated that she had asked for them to be flight risks. So they couldn't flee the country because they did have connections in other countries, you know, because they're from another country. The Aruban people were in an uproar over her statements and they officially stopped helping her. Like before that, they were helping her like pass out flyers and like supportive and all that stuff. But they were now like, they were over it. So a few days later, Beth did go to the media and formally apologize, which good for her. Cause like, I don't think I would have been able to do that.
No, especially if they were all of a sudden like, nope, sorry.
Yeah.
I'd be so pissed.
In 2008, Aruban officials reopened the case against Vandersloot after a tape showing him describing Natalie's death, which was filmed via a hidden camera by a Dutch crime reporter, Peter de Vries, was released. Police, however, were unable to confirm that his story was factual, and therefore he was not kept in
custody.
Custody, yes. Sorry, like blanking out over
no
here.
No worries. Wow.
Yeah. Then in November the same year, a journalist by the name of Greta Van Susteren, I think that's how you say it. It's probably not how you say it. actually got an interview with Vandersloot in Thailand where he claimed that he had sold Natalie into sex slavery.
Oh my God.
Yes. Later, he called her back and told her that he had been lying. His story was not true. So this guy has like changed his story 55 times. Like, I'm sorry, but that just screams guilty in my opinion.
Yeah.
And the fact that they couldn't tie him down with any of that is just disgusting.
Yeah.
He also allegedly extorted $25,000 from Beth, Natalie's mom, in exchange for Natalie's remains, which he never provided. And then he fled to Peru with that $25,000, where everything finally caught up to him in, unfortunately, a very bad manner. So on May 30th, 2010, exactly 5 years to the day of Natalie's disappearance, Stephanie Flores, a university student and daughter of a presidential candidate, was found beaten to death in a hotel room rented by Yaron in Lima, Peru. Thank fucking God this piece of shit motherfucker was found guilty, and he is now serving 28 years, which is not good enough in my opinion,
no,
in a Peruvian prison, which hopefully that's like really bad.
Hopefully. Holy shit. Did you hear my jaw hit the ground? Oh yeah. My God.
My jaw hit the ground too, because when I originally heard this story many, many years ago, that detail was not given.
Yeah. Well, thank God he's in jail, but
yeah.
Oh my gosh. I thought that you were going to say that he either died or committed suicide.
No, he's too vain. He's too narcissistic, sociopath for that. But I'm sure his father is so proud, you know, because he told him, like, without a crime scene, without a body, without, he left all of that there.
Mm-hmm.
I'm so upset.
Your face.
Because if they would have just kept him and figured out, like, how he was guilty of Natalie's disappearance and probably murder, this poor woman would not have been murdered.
Yeah. And it, like, clearly there was something wrong, and whether or not he committed a murder or just left a girl to find her own way home in a foreign country, whatever it may be, like, clearly he was lying, and you should continue to hold him at least until you can get the story straight.
Yeah.
Wow.
There has to be some kind of surveillance, some kind of CCTV, which I know is like 2005, but there has to be something out there that they just didn't look at.
Yeah.
Somebody had to see, if there was that much partying, which everyone was probably wasted off their ass, but if there was that many people in the street, that much partying going on, like, surely somebody saw something, you know?
Right. Wow.
So in 2011, Natalie Holloway was officially declared dead. She did get a death certificate. Her parents got her death certificate. Wow. Her mother, Beth, has never stopped looking for her. Countless people have donated their time and their money for searches, rewards, and media coverage to try and help give this mother justice. But as of today, Natalie's remains have never been found.
Wow.
And that is the very tragic disappearance of Natalie Holloway.
That's so sad.
I know. I remember this, like, in 2005. I remember, like, her face on everything, on every news network.
Really?
Like, yeah, because she was, like, very beautiful, blonde hair, you know, blue eyes, like, the whole shebang, like, smart, funny, you know, all this stuff. But
yeah.
And then, you know, and then it just wasn't. It just wasn't. It just, you didn't hear about it anymore. And then I heard it again on like a podcast and got like more details and stuff. which I did listen to. I want to give credit where credit's due. There's a podcast called Case File, I believe it is. Never listened to it in my entire life. But when I was like doing research, I just like wasn't getting the, you know, the nitty gritty of like some of the details. And I was like,
yeah,
it was like a 2 hour long episode. So
oh, wow.
Like, I'm going to listen to that. So
yeah,
that's where I got like some of my details about like, you know, the boy's story is changing and things like that. But it's a really good episode and the guy has a really cool accent, just like your person did. He's from like New Zealand. I love it. I don't know. He's an anonymous host.
Oh yeah. Wow.
So he has like a
interesting
New Zealand accent. I think that's what I think it is, but
yeah. Wow. That's really heartbreaking. I'm glad that the guy who likely had some sort of involvement in her disappearance is at least in jail. It sucks that the other two aren't, because clearly there's something,
they know something up there.
Yeah.
Even if they had nothing to do with her actual death, I think that they definitely know what happened to her and probably know where she is.
Yeah.
So, wow. Yeah. So I will post beautiful pictures of Natalie and not so beautiful pictures of her probably murderer Instagram. So make sure you follow us over there at @inhuman_podcast. And we have been doing like little TikTok stories, I guess you could say.
Yeah.
Covering our cases, trying to get better at that. I like not so great at the whole like squeezing it into 60 seconds or whatever. But we'll get there. But
yes.
And then you can follow us on Twitter @inhuman_podcast. You can follow us on Facebook @inhuman_podcast. And that's everything, right?
Yeah, that's all. Rate and leave a rating and or review if you like our podcast, because it would mean a lot to us. We had like 21 ratings, so
help us get to 50. Help us get to 50.
Yeah. 50. Yeah. 50 by the end of the year. That's my goal.
50 by the end of the year. That should be definitely doable.
Hopefully.
Yeah.
So if you're listening, please rate us. Yeah. All you have to do is tap the stars. You don't even have to leave a review.
Yeah. It's very easy. Just a little boop and it's done.
Yep, exactly.
But we want to thank you guys so much for listening. And as always, keep it human.
Bye.